Welcome to It's Our Money with Ellen Brown, a look behind the curtain at the hidden world of monetary control, control that determines global economic winners and losers and who benefits. Ellen Brown is a lawyer, scholar, and best-selling author of Web of Debt and the Public Bank Solution. She's the founder of the Public Banking Institute and a prolific contributor to the growing discussion about the evolving world of economic theory. Later in the program, we'll take a look at new developments within the public banking movement. But now, here's Ellen. Money, get away.
Thanks, Walt. Today I'll be interviewing David Leeper, who is running for state treasurer in Wisconsin on a state bank platform. And, unlike myself, he actually has a chance of winning. He also has some very promising ideas. But first, I want to take a look at the current state of the global banking system through the eyes of two of its most powerful leaders, who happen to be women. Janet Yellen, who is head of the Fed, and Christine Lagarde, who is managing director of the IMF. They had a debate that was published in the Wall Street Journal on the hot issues of the day, including what to do about the shadow banking system, which was what caused the credit crisis in 2008, and no doubt will cause the next one. So that's what I just wrote an article on, and what I thought I would talk about, their debate, and what will happen if the banking system actually does collapse. First, I'll just say, I actually sort of like these women. They seem sincere. They look sort of like Mutt and Jeff. I saw a little video of them walking in. Christine Lagarde is this elegant French woman, very tall and thin, and wears nylons and heels and shows off her very sleek legs. And Janet Yellen is sort of short and round and sort of Mrs. Santa Claus looking. She wears a pantsuit and sensible shoes, virtually flat. She sort of melts into her chair, and Christine sits right up there, you know, like a French model. not that she looks like a model anymore. She's put on a few years. But anyway, yeah, they were sincere. Unlike Alan Greenspan, who was famous for hiding the ball, and you never really knew exactly what he was trying to say, or Ben Bernanke was actually pretty sincere in the beginning of his career, or forthright. You know, he said what he was thinking, and he got criticized for that. I remember one newscaster said something like, if you're going to play the wizard, you have to stay behind the curtain, which made me laugh. I wondered if maybe he'd gotten it from my book, Web of Debt. But anyway, so I sort of warmed up to them, and particularly because they didn't seem to mind admitting that they were clueless what to do about the shadow banking system, which is probably the big challenge of the day for them. Basically, what the shadow banking system means is the derivatives market, and it is still exploding. The Dodd-Frank Act certainly didn't get control of it. And the five big derivative banks have practically the whole market, and they are our biggest banks. And that is their principal business. So it's the nature of a shadow banking system that you can't regulate it. I mean, that's virtually the definition. It's the part of the system. You set up some rules, and it's the part of the system that's in the shadows that gets around the rules. So as soon as you try to set up rules for it, you'll come up with some new financial instruments or something else where by the time the regulators figure out what they're up to, and managed to get Congress to pass some new rules, they've changed the system again. I mean, they can change much, much faster than we can figure them out and come up with some rules. So really what you have to do is not regulate it, but just shut it down, just declare it's illegal. But, of course, nobody dares to do that because of these five big banks that are the derivatives system and that, as we know, essentially own Congress. But anyway, you still got this problem of this exponential growth that's off the charts and that's liable to bring down the system. You can't have exponential growth forever. So there's all this word on the blogosphere is that we're heading for a big collapse. It's just a question of when. And then they point to the fact that the BRICS have come out with their new monetary fund. That's Brazil, Russia, India, and China, plus a lot of other countries that have joined. So they're in competition with the IMF. So everybody's saying that means we'll see the dumping of the dollar and we'll have hyperinflation when all these dollars come flooding back into the U.S. Well, I don't actually think that's a problem. It doesn't matter if the bonds come flooding. I mean, if the bonds don't get bought by foreign investors, we've got the Federal Reserve, and they can buy up whatever bonds the Treasury feels like issuing. The way it works is the Treasury sets the price. They don't change their interest rate in order to try to attract investors. They set the interest rate, and they sell whatever they sell, and whatever's left over, the big banks that are authorized to buy bonds come in and buy them, and they're kind of forced to buy them. And then the Federal Reserve buys whatever's left over. And, of course, they've always got the money to do it because they just print the money. So the flooding, the coming back, or the fact that other countries don't want to buy our bonds is not a big issue. What I do see as an issue is the fact that this new Asian Monetary Fund will be competing with our monetary fund. In fact, I saw it suggested on the internet that that was a reason for all this warmongering in the Middle East, this push for World War III. We're trying to capture militarily what we may be losing in the old debt system, which is how we've captured them up till now. The way the system worked was the IMF would go in. We know from John Perkins's book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, that first the hitmen would go in and persuade these countries to sign up for different projects that they didn't really need, like maybe a dam or a nuclear plant, and then they would borrow in order to build those things, and then the monetary powers, whoever, somebody, would crash their currencies or in some way raise the interest rate substantially or short sell the currency, causing it to be devalued, which meant that suddenly it took a lot more of their local currency to meet their debts, so they couldn't afford to pay on the debts. So then the IMF would come in and say, we'll refinance that debt for you, but you have to agree to our conditionalities, basically austerity measures, one of which is they would have to sell off their public assets, basically for a song, because their currency was so devalued. So then our big corporations would come in and buy up these assets for pennies on the dollar. So they managed to get, like a lot of countries had nationalized their oil, they nationalized their bus service and their airplanes and their water, etc. So our companies would come in, buy all this stuff up, and now they virtually own the world, our big banks and our big companies, which are pretty much, definitely have interlocking directorates, and they're pretty much the same people, or a lot of the same people. So that is a system that's liable to go down. So what I wrote about is that, in fact, the monetary system has changed every 20 or 30 years for the last three centuries. And so what we'll do, instead of seeing a big collapse that wipes out our standard of living, etc., is, well, we might have that, but what will ultimately happen is we'll come up with another monetary system, just like we always have before. Hopefully, something like FDR did, which is a really radical change that really changes the system. And the one I'd like to go back to is public banking, the system of Benjamin Franklin and the American colonists. So you can read all about that and more on my blog at ellenbrown.com, or I think my latest article is posted on the PRN website. But now it's time to get to our interesting guest. My guest today is Dave Leeper, who is running for state treasurer in Wisconsin on a state bank platform. I'm interested in interviewing him because I just ran for state treasurer on a state bank platform. Dave is a fourth generation elected official in Wisconsin. He's an attorney in Madison. He's been a family commissioner, a founding member of the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice, a conflict resolution consultant in Mozambique, a professor and supervisor of legal clinics in Ukraine, director of the Plowshares Peace Studies Project at Earlham College, and a Fulbright lecturer on human rights at Africa University in Zimbabwe. He's got not only a law degree, but a master's in divinity, and he is a pastor at two United Methodist churches. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you very much, Ellen. It's quite a pleasure to be able to discuss our money with you.
Oh, thanks. Well, you're running for state treasurer. I just got knocked out as state treasurer in California at the primary level, but I didn't feel too bad about it because every single independent and third-party candidate got knocked out. In other words, in California, there will be no third-party or independent candidates going on to the general elections. This is due to our new top-two system where all the candidates run at once, and needless to say, the top-two are always Democrats and Republicans. But I did get the most votes of any third-party or independent candidate, and Laura Wells, who also ran on a state bank platform, got the second most vote. She ran for controller. So the state bank idea has definitely got traction here in California. And we've had some other progress, too, which I can't really report on, but we're definitely making some waves. So I'd love to hear about your experiences in Wisconsin with this platform, particularly with the state bank idea.
Yes, thank you, Ellen. And I did read your analysis after the election, and it really is quite disturbing that that California has found a way, apparently, to limit so completely the people, the candidates who will be on the ballot for the November election. I can tell you, in Wisconsin, we have two Democrats. I'm one of two Democrats running for state treasurer. There are two Republicans running for state treasurer. There's a Green Party, there's a Libertarian Party, and there's a Constitutional Party. So we will have five different parties on the November ballot for Wisconsin state treasurer.
Mm-hmm. That's what we used to have, just up until not this. The last two elections have been top two primaries, and I've seen some complaints about it that even among the Democrats and Republicans, because let's say you have four, this is a Democratic state, say you've got four Democratic candidates, which did happen, and two Republican candidates, and if the Republicans split between those two candidates and the Democrats split four ways between their four, the top two are liable to be the Republicans, even though the Democrats collectively got more votes, and it's a Democratic state. So it really is a poor idea. I don't even know who came up with it. It's not serving us, but what it does manage to do is make sure that nobody goes on to the general election who isn't supported by big money.
Yes,
and there's just no way.
That's true, and it brings to my mind the fact that we have lots and lots of different areas that require some real serious change. Our political system, our elections, our environment, our health care. I mean, we have so many things that are just crying out for correction and change. And the reason I'm running for state treasurer is because the unifying force behind all of this bad policy is big money in politics. And I hope that if we can create a State Bank of Wisconsin, we will have made a small step into gaining back control of our money. And if we can gain control of our money, that's when we can begin to address environmental problems, election problems, so many different things that we, our educational problems, you know, many things that we don't seem to be able to address effectively, at least not here in Wisconsin.
Right, and for no good reason. I mean, we have the money. People think that it would be inflationary for the government to actually issue money, but I've written two books on this.
Yes.
If you issue the money to pay for things, in other words, you've got the workers, you've got the materials. All the money is an acknowledgement, a receipt, an acknowledgement that the workers and materials, the workers have performed, done some work for the government, and the suppliers have supplied the materials. So you give them, you trade them for these little receipts that are then good for trade in the economy. So you're actually, those little receipts will then go into their pockets and they will spend on more consumer goods, which means there will be more demand. They will go into the stores and the shoe salesman is not going to raise the price of his shoes when he sees some more money coming in. He's going to put in more orders for shoes.
Sure.
And then the shoe manufacturer will make more shoes. So you'll just stimulate the economy. You'll have more people working. And more people have money in their pockets, able to buy the things that they need. I know there's an issue of maybe people will spend too much if they have too much money. I mean, you know, you squander resources. But it doesn't have to be that way at all. I mean, there are all different ways that you can control resources. And one way is to put some of that money that's issued by the government into research and development of better ways of using resources, like better energy, ways of getting rid of waste, you know, turning the ocean water into something clean and usable, et cetera.
Right. I understand, and I really appreciate the Public Bank Solution book, which really has highlighted how governments have the ability to use banking to affect the economy. And that's certainly an important aspect of it, but the other aspect that is so critical here in Wisconsin is the money in politics that influences our elected officials. We you probably know we had a recall of our Governor Walker a couple years ago. We tried to recall him, and I believe that it was either $23 or $33 million of outside money was put into that recall election. And we just can't make good decisions in a democracy if we have that kind of money. So one of the important reasons I'm running for state treasurer is to try to stop the cycle where money is gradually raised up to the top through fees and interests and more concentrated through our financial system until it gets to the very top 1% or maybe 0.1%. And then those people, those billionaires, particularly Koch brothers are active here in Wisconsin, you know, they buy our elections and they pay for ALEC to write our laws. And we have Republican control of the governor's office, the assembly, and the Senate. They do just about whatever ALEC wants them to do. So we really have to stop the power of money, as well as learn how to stimulate our own economies better.
Right. And I particularly noticed this running for office, how impossible it is when you talk about the numbers that, well, there's 39 million people, I guess, in California now. I was thinking it was 37, but way more people than you could reach by putting a sign on your lawn or putting bumper stickers on your car. You're not, fortunately, we do have the internet, which allows us to reach a lot more people than we used to be able to for free. But unless you have enough money to advertise on television, you're not going to reach those people. And it's either advertised on television or be in the debates, but they don't allow the third-party candidates in the debates. I mean, you're in a major party, and that's great that you're promoting this position in a major party, and I fervently hope that you win. I think that would be great.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about that, Ellen, because I know you ran as a Green candidate, and I'm certainly aware that the Green Party supports public banking, and I find that very attractive. I think it may have even been the Green Party that first alerted me to public banking and some of the possibilities. And I have been a Democratic district attorney. I've been involved in the Democratic Party for a long time. I tried to contact several Democratic legislators a couple years ago to ask them, could they help introduce public banking? And I got the response that no, there's, you know, this is just absolutely impossible in the circumstances, the political circumstances of fighting drastically for any kind of rights here in Wisconsin. They said we can't even talk about public banking. But when it came time to think about running for state treasurer in Wisconsin, I talked to several people, including my brother, Mark Miller, is a state senator. And he said, not only is this a good idea, this is a great idea, and I will support you enthusiastically. And my own state senator, Fred Risser, also is supporting me and is supporting the concept of state banking. So I see the Democratic Party making a strong move in this direction. And I've been speaking, I think I've spoken to almost every congressional district convention and to the state convention and to many county parties. And we really get a strong, excited response to the idea that we can create a Bank of Wisconsin and begin to control our own resources. So I'm encouraged by what I've seen from the Democrats here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's great. And we did have a bill in 2011 that passed both houses of the legislature, and all the Democrats voted for it and all the Republicans voted against it. But we're a Democratic state, so it passed.
Yeah.
But then Jerry Brown, who is a reputed reputative Democrat, didn't sign it. But
yeah.
He said it was because we had enough committees and we could do this in-house. But then they haven't done anything more on it. But now I've actually reached, and I don't know what I can say about this, but anyway, I think there's actually hope for reinvigorating this bill here in California. I agree with you. The Democrats are definitely receptive to this idea. And I think even more now, because it's become so obvious how corrupt Wall Street is, why
yeah.
do we want to be giving all of our money to them to be handling? It's not even safe, let alone the fact that they're taking huge sums in fees and interest rate swaps where they're actually betting against us and the thing is manipulated and it's fraudulent, not even counting that. If they go bankrupt, we have this new thing called a bail-in where they'll be taking deposits, and it looks to me like they'll be, I know that the government deposits are supposedly collateralized, so the government officials always think they're safe, but I question that because the derivatives go first in bankruptcy under the Bankruptcy Reform Act, which means they take the collateral and there's liable to just be nothing left. They've actually used this collateral. They rehypothecate their collateral. They use it several different times. So
right.
whoever has got the thing at the end of the chain gets it when the thing goes bankrupt. It's like musical chairs.
Yeah, and you know, I was we have our money. The state of Wisconsin, as I understand it, keeps about $350 million in U.S. Bank, which I believe is about the fifth largest investment bank in the United States. And I try to tell people, you know, U.S. Bank is not a Wisconsin corporation. It is not tied in to our success as a state. You know, we need our money in smaller local community banks, in credit unions. We need our money in state and county banks where the economic health of the state and of the county is what makes the bank strong. U.S. Bank, they don't have to care about us at all, you know. They okay. can go on about their way as if we almost don't exist. And that does not seem safe to me, as you said.
Right. But then you can't really put it in small banks either because they can't use that money. In California, they have to post 110% collateral. So they can't use it for loans. It's all collateralized. Now, why is it that the big banks can use it? It's because they pretend it's collateralized. I mean, they say, oh, yes, it's backed by all these federal securities that are sitting here on our books. But they use those federal securities as collateral in the repo market at the same time. So that's why I think the whole thing's very shady and shaky.
Yeah.
Suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure, you know, as your book makes it so clear, banking really is just about trust. You know, it's about trust. And do we trust U.S. Bank more than we trust our own friends and neighbors who make up the state of Wisconsin? You know, I believe that, like several of the examples in other places, Australia, New Zealand, other countries that you mentioned, you know, you can develop trust for your local unit of government that will give it the freedom and to weather hard times, you know, because you're committed to that government and it's committed to your growth. That's a much different relationship than we have with a large, you know, international bank.
Mm-hmm. That's the way with the Bank of North Dakota. I mean, we have a retired Bank of North Dakota man on our advisory board with the Public Banking Institute. And the way he tells it, it's just like one big family. I mean, they're all just kind of sitting in one little office. And if this department needs help or that department needs help, they're there. It's like they don't need rainy day funds. They've got credit lines with each other. When they have emergencies, like they had these two big floods in the last two decades, and they were right there doing what had to be done, not looking at the exclusions in your insurance policy or trying to get out of helping, but they're actually there to help, and that's what they do. That's what they get paid for.
Well, sure, and that's what helps the state of North Dakota, and that's what could help Wisconsin. You know, I wanted to point out to you that we have an institution here in Wisconsin. It's the Board of Public Lands Commission, and it's been around, it's created by the Constitution, and they control our public lands, and we also contribute many of our traffic fines and forfeitures. Many collections from the state go into the Public Lands Commission. They then loan that money out to municipalities to buy fire equipment, to build schools, to build water treatment. And I was talking to the secretary of that Public Lands Commission. I think she said that in their 150 years, they have not had one defaulted loan. You know, if you're providing what people need and not for a profit, they may have had some late loans, you know, but nothing defaulted because the municipalities can pull together and they can meet those requirements as long as they don't get out of hand with interest and compound interest.
Well, that's another thing. Your average bank is actually trying to catch people up on their payments. If they don't pay in a certain mm-hmm. amount of time, then they call them in default. They don't make excuses for them. But in North Dakota, because the bank it's the same bank that's following along with your mortgage. It hasn't been sold off to investors who just want mm-hmm. short-term profit and all that's all they're interested in. they'll make concessions. They'll work with you to try to figure out how to work it out. In fact, I was just, my last interview was with Bob Hockett, whose thing is, he's a professor in, he's a professor of law, but he's the expert in eminent domain as a way to renegotiate properties on behalf of homeowners. And the reason they have to do it is they, even if the investors want to renegotiate, they can't do it because, first of all, it's a huge group that they would all have to get together and agree. But even if they did agree, there are all these picky provisions in their pooling and servicing agreements that don't allow them to renegotiate the deal there. They get their pound of flesh no matter what.
Yeah. And I've been reading about that and how it's being used or hopes to be used in California. I think that's really promising. And it makes me think of one thing, probably the most important thing I learned from your book, Ellen, is that the way things are isn't the way they have to be. It just came out this way. We've been having trial and error experiments on banking, well, for the last several thousand years, but most seriously for the last 400 or 500 years. Our society, our Western European society primarily, has been experimenting with banking, but the way things have turned out isn't the way they have to be. We could organize things differently in many, many ways, and we just have to take off the blinders and look around and say, you know, no, we don't have to meet these, you know, we don't have to say small banks have reserve requirements, but big banks can handle it by collateralizing their debt, something like that. You know, as Senator Warren says, the game is rigged. If you try to follow all these rules, you're not going to get where you need to go. You've got to step back, take a look at the big picture, and say, we make these rules. We make these rules in society. And we can remake them to accomplish the kind of world we want. And if we can get to that point through public banking, it will open not only our banking eyes, it will open our eyes to a whole new world where we've been constrained by laws that have been predicated on greed and competition rather than on generosity and abundance. And I think we can turn things around. And I think this banking is the key that's going to let people see it.
Yeah, I agree. When I first wrote Web of Debt and then I wrote Public Bank Solution, when I first wrote Web of Debt, I was thinking that really the solution is for governments to issue their own money instead of allowing banks to issue it. But the more I look at the whole banking system, it really is a good system. The
yeah.
only thing wrong with it is the fact that it's publicly owned, I mean privately owned. If it were publicly owned, the fact that banks issue money, it's sort of like a big community currency system. And you yourself issue the money by taking out a loan. Money is created when you take out a loan. So basically what you're doing is if you went to the grocer and said, here, take my IOU, I'll pay you on Friday, the grocer wouldn't do it because he doesn't know who you are. I mean, maybe
yeah.
your grocer would, but LA they wouldn't. But it,
yeah.
but it, you can go to the bank and say, here's who I am, this is how I'll pay it back, you know where to find me.
Yeah.
And the bank will give you, will turn your IOU into something you can spend. So it's like you're going to use somebody else's services, but they haven't collected yet. So you're giving them this little receipt that just shows that you owe them or that you owe somebody. You owe the bank. That's the other thing. Is it's whether the recipient gets paid isn't dependent on whether you pay. You're going
That's
to
right.
pay the bank.
That's right. You sort of share some of the inevitable risk. And,
yeah.
you know, it makes me think of my grandfather. My grandfather was a farmer, and in the Great Depression, their First National Bank closed, and he and many of their neighbors reopened that First National Bank during the Depression, and he used to tell me stories about how they would deliver loads of coal to people who didn't have any coal for the winter. Mm-hmm. And he said, I knew who those people were. I knew that they were good for their loans. You know, and it just made me think exactly what you're saying. You have a community of people looking out for each other. And the banker has a useful function. You know, the banker, we don't want banks that make bad loans. We don't want private or public banks that make bad loans. But what we do want is banks that make loans with the broad picture of our community health in mind and helping people get through a cold winter in the Depression was something that was good for that whole community. And it proved to be useful. My grandfather always said they repaid 97 cents on the dollar. You know, when they closed the bank, they didn't have money to pay anything. But after rebuilding it and working with the local families, they were able to repay almost everything.
That's a great story. And that is the difference. So we don't know our neighbors, and you don't know that you can trust them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you need banks for. But the function of the bank is not to lend you gold that the bank has and you don't have. The function of the bank is to oversee this exchange between you and the buyer or seller, you and the person you're trading with. So they're just there to set the rules, make sure the law is followed or whatever, make sure each party is getting their due and knows how to find the, or, you know, how to collect or whatever.
Yeah. And again, your book really pointed out how short our experience in banking is. I mean, to me, a couple hundred years is a pretty short period of time to develop, you know, fundamental and important social institutions. There's every reason to believe that we've got new banking, credit, exchange opportunities that we haven't even thought about. And the reason we haven't thought about them is the bankers, the people who've been doing banking for our society, have been focused almost exclusively on return for their investors or private profit.
Right.
You know, we try to open that up by putting in some requirements for public investment, but that's an add-on. It's not the purpose of the bank. And it's really encouraging to hear you talk about North Dakota and what it actually feels like to be in the position of a bank that can say, the economic health of my whole state is my concern. And what can we do to best meet that? I look forward to being Wisconsin State Treasurer and sitting on the board of the Bank of Wisconsin and trying to say, how can we facilitate commerce? How can we extend credit? How can we build up our communities so that they are safe and secure? And we know we're going to have another bubble. We know we're going to have financial problems on the national and international level. How can we create systems that will allow us to function when the global system is running out of control? I think that's a key benefit, and I've talked to a lot of people in Wisconsin who recognize that as a real benefit. You know, if you're tied in only to a national and an international system, you have no control over your own security. And if we can create a Bank of Wisconsin that will manage credit, that has the trust of people, you know, we will be able to weather storms, and that's a great benefit.
That's great to hear you talk like that, because most people just don't trust politicians, and it's so refreshing to have somebody who's, I mean, you're obviously sincere, and that is actually your goal. You've been a Methodist minister, and
Ellen, let me just say that the idea that government can't be trusted is a fundamental lie that has been intentionally, forcefully, and with a great deal of money forced on our society in the last 50, 60 years. You know, there are lots of people, people or corporations, you might say, who benefit greatly from the idea that we can't trust government. Well, I every chance I get, I say that is a lie, and I will stand behind that statement all the way. And all we have to do is look at our Public Lands Commission, you know, and we have Public Lands Commission in Wisconsin handles $1 billion. That's how many assets they have. And they have had no problems. They have a small staff. They're efficient. They're trustworthy. And they help communities all over the state of Wisconsin. I want to expand that same thing to a larger scale and do it through the Bank of Wisconsin. So I think we have to say that this you can't trust government, that is simply a lie. And the fact is you can't trust the Bank of America or Chase or U.S. Bank. I mean, we know we can't trust them because they've got billions of dollars in fines for lying and cheating us. You know, we just have to stand up against the idea that government is our enemy. It's just not true.
Right. What you can't trust is privatization, I think. Once, like you say, once the profit motive's in there, you can't trust what people are up to.
But that's true.
If you're civil servants just doing your job, in a public bank, there really is no opportunity to speculate. There are no bonuses, fees, commissions. You can't do derivatives, or there's no way. Well, I guess they could theoretically, but anyway, they
sure you could always try. But I put it this way: it is a lot easier with open records laws and with open meeting laws. It is a lot easier to get to the root of a problem that government has than it is to get at the root of a problem in a financial institution. I mean, they are intentionally opaque so that we don't know what is going on.
Yeah, at one time, politicians could be, like, say, in third world countries, you would expect politicians to be manipulating perhaps their public banks, if they have public banks. But now we have at least the possibility of total transparency, where
yeah.
you could have all the books up on the internet for anybody
yeah.
to see. So
yeah, wouldn't that be nice? That really would. Yeah, that's a great possibility. And I'm glad you mentioned that internet again, because that's really important to my campaign. I wouldn't and couldn't run a campaign for statewide office, even in a relatively small state like Wisconsin, if I didn't have the internet and if I didn't have the ability to communicate with people pretty freely. And I wonder if I can give the listeners my website so they can reach me, contact me, see some of the materials that I'm putting up on my website and Facebook. Is that all right?
Yes, please do.
It's very simple. The website is witreasurer.org. So it's witreasurer.org. And my Facebook is the same, witreasurer. So, of course, you can reach me either through Facebook or through my webpage. And I spoke to, just yesterday, two people called me wondering how they can get some material because they heard about the state bank and they wanted to distribute it at their local meeting. They've got a move to amend meeting to amend the Constitution, and they want to know how to get my material. So I'm able to run a campaign that communicates these ideas through the internet at very little cost. And I really, myself, would not run a campaign any other way. Mm-hmm. I have no interest in spending my time begging for money and then spending it on the radio, television, on the political industrial institutions that we've set up to run our multi-billion dollar campaigns. We got to break free of all that, and the internet gives us a way.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it's been great talking to you, and I hope all the best for your election. I really hope you win.
Thank you. Thank you. It would really, as far as I know, other than your running for treasurer in California, I haven't heard of any other treasurers that are running on a public banking platform. Have you?
No, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an awful lot of interest.
And what I'm hoping is that when I'm elected as Wisconsin treasurer, I'll be able to communicate to other Democratic parties primarily that this is a crucial issue. This is an issue people understand. It's an issue they care about. It can be your issue, and let's just move this clear across the country and get it done.
Oh, that it would be great if you talked to our treasurer or our controller, who will be the treasurer, I'm quite sure. I actually just talked to him 2 days ago. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this, but he's very interested in the idea. So,
well, good. Good. I hope I'll get the chance.
Okay. All right, Dave. It was great talking to you.
Thank you, Ellen.
Thank
Bye.
You. That was Dave Leeper, who is running for Wisconsin State Treasurer.
Today's public banking report is taken from a longer conversation that Ellen and I had with two community bankers that will be featured in total on our next show. But we thought that this section about public banking would be worth repeating. As communities begin to assess the reasons and the prospects for creating local public banks, a lot of considerations have to be made. We spoke with two prominent community bankers about how the public banking prospect fits into the current banking industry and why they think public banks can help shift the foundations of community finance. Former Advanta Bank President Jeffrey Beck of Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, and founder and president of United Bank in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Dr. Emma Chappelle, spoke with us about what distinguishes the public bank model from the private bankers whose institutions currently control public money. Jeff Beck says one of the biggest factors is
the trust of having an organization like the Bank of North Dakota that's looking out for your interest. There's also the community, where there's a recognition that this bank is not there to drive other banks out of business, but rather find ways to partner where good loans can be made that might not otherwise get made in the private regulated model. And I think it's important to recognize that at Bank of North Dakota, to my knowledge, there is not a primary federal regulator there.
They are audited several different ways, and
yes,
it's just the Bank of North Dakota that's not FDIC insured. I think the local banks are FDIC
Absolutely.
Insured
Absolutely.
For their deposits. So, and the reason the Bank of North Dakota isn't is that their big depositor, I mean, virtually their whole deposit base is the state, which
yes.
has way more than $250,000. So
mm-hmm.
it won't do them any good, and it'll put them under the thumb of the big banks, which control the FDIC pretty much because they're the big contributors.
I couldn't agree more. Because of the situation they are in, they are not subject to the pressures and vagaries associated with the regulated environment.
Right.
And that's a big positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that from the standpoint that there shouldn't be oversight. To your point, they're being audited and all that, and there needs to be that oversight. It's just that they are immune from the vagaries of what's happening in the private banking regulated environment. And I think
yeah.
that's a big plus. It also means in that bank that the owners and the depositors essentially have the same goals. So you don't have kind of a conflict there. The good outcomes at that bank are good for both the depositors, the taxpayers, and whoever the capital holder is, which may or may not
the
be
taxpayers.
But, you know, you have this alignment between
mm-hmm.
the capital owner and the depositor that you just don't have in the private sector. And I think that provides tremendous opportunity because it allows the bank to take a longer-term perspective on what's good for the community as opposed to the 3-month profit performance thing.
in California, and I've worked for a long time to try to get a state bank going, and also in Washington State, the treasurer in both places, or the treasurer's department anyway, their big concern is they don't want to put the taxpayers' money at risk, and they can't afford to dip into their budget, and they don't have money to lend because they need their money for the budget. But of course, to me, they're misunderstanding the whole point of having a bank. You don't lend your deposits. Your deposits are still there, and they can still be spent. But anyway, this whole notion of they don't want to take the risk. In North Dakota, because they've been doing this for a century, they have their own capital built up. So whenever they do take invest in any kind of loan that's a bit risky, something in the community that might be challenged. I mean, I could just see in California, if we had those loans, there'd be people peering, or legislators saying, "Oh dear, that looks too risky. We shouldn't be doing that loan." But the bank can do it because they're not putting the taxpayers' money. They're not drawing on the taxpayers' money at all. It's their own capital fund that they have built up with their own profits over a long period of very, very prudent lending. So my suggestion in California is that they should start out the way that what the Bank of North Dakota used to do is just buy bonds. They didn't even make risky loans. They just bought up government bonds. So I'm thinking that the bank could be used to fund the state's own infrastructure bonds. And basically what it would do would be to get their infrastructure for half price, basically, because they don't have to pay double over the course of 30 years for interest. So what do you think about that?
Well, we've looked at those models, and it's an attractive profit model that results in a capital build in a public bank, and it's one of those win-win situations. You don't always have that, depending on whatever the interest rate structure is, but there are a lot of municipalities out there that have some high-cost bonds out there, and this model would allow them to defease those bonds and get the benefits of that.
Jeff, the cost of bonding for a municipality is high, isn't it? I mean, there's insurance, there's risk managers, and legal approvals and so forth. I mean, that's quite a bit of money that could be saved, isn't it?
Exactly. And there have got to be ways, especially where bonds are outstanding that are high cost, where that economic benefit is returned to the municipality.
And that almost makes it for free, doesn't it? Because when they issue a bond, or it's basically they're making that money up. They're putting it on their books, paying themselves interest. It seems to me they're making money for almost no expense.
I wouldn't say it's free. I don't think anything is free. But it's a very attractive cost reduction proposition, which means that the taxpayer is the one who ultimately benefits. The community benefits.
Mm-hmm. And it's pretty risk-free, so...
Yeah,
politicians won't block it.
Yep, and you've got to have an organization that's run by people who know what they're doing. It can't just be, no offense to the treasurer of the local high school basketball team, but you need to have people who really know what they're doing. I think governance of a public bank is a critical element, because if the bank management is reporting directly into a body of elected officials, you got a real problem.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, that's what we have a retired Bank of North Dakota man on our advisory board on Public Banking Institute, and that's what he very clearly said. We are not politicians. We are bankers. So they're hired to be prudent bankers, and they do prudent banking.
In fact, when we started our bank, we made that a definite policy that there would not be any politicians on our board. That was our policy from the start. But one thing I wanted to say about this public bank and sourcing capital for it, when I was working to help get a mayor elected in this city, one of the things I found out was that a lot of the money that comes in to the city goes out through investment companies that are outside of the city. So the dollars do not recycle back in the city. There's investment companies in other states that are managing our money. And they're earning the fees for managing our money, and they're earning big fees for managing our money. So I'm thinking that maybe that possibly the public bank would help save those dollars in the state and recycle those dollars. For example, we're having so many problems with funding education in this city. If half of those investment dollars and fees that go outside of the state stayed in the state, perhaps we could help fund education.
I assume the fees would be lower, too. I mean, they're not real fees, right?
No,
I mean,
they're not.
If you're paying a civil servant to do it, it's going to be much cheaper, right?
That's right.
I'll just say one thing. I've heard that the reason that community banks are a little afraid to get on board with public banking is that they think they will have to sell out to the big banks, and so they don't want to alienate their new owners. But so that's why it's so important to have a movement, you know, a whole group that are all pushing together where we get to a critical mass and are able to persuade our legislators that this is a thing to do.
And right. I agree. And it's all about educating people about what the public bank can do. And I think the public bank can do so much. I'm looking forward to it being established because I know that the community banks need to be undergirded in a manner that it will help them to continue to exist.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
Unfortunately, recognizing that in the current banking system, this model doesn't have a good fit. And by that, I mean that politically and regulatorily, this is an unknown, and unknowns need to be opposed. You know, that's mm-hmm. kind of the default position, and that's what has to be overcome.
It's a good point, Jeff. And I think that ultimately what we're looking at here is splitting the industry into two different categories, which I think will simply coexist. One will be the public banking category of banking as a utility, and the other will be the continuation of what's left of the remnants of the speculative financial private financial institutions, whose purpose is to simply make more money, bottom line results. They're really quite distinct elements. We certainly don't expect that we're going to be able to prevail against the big banks, which basically run the world, but we do know that it's our money. And if we could get our hands back on it, we can do what we need to do structurally, institutionally, to invest in ourselves, which is really the future of the American economy. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Dr. Evan Chappelle of Philadelphia and Jeff Beck of Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, and the world of banking. Thrilled to have you on board and look forward to having your participation as we move ahead with the public banking agenda in the United States.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure being a part of it.
Yeah, great talking to you all.
That's it for this edition of It's Our Money with Ellen Brown. Our thanks to David Leeper, candidate for Wisconsin's state treasurer running on a state bank platform, and Dr. Emma Chappelle and Jeffrey Beck of the Pennsylvania Project. You can listen to our earlier shows via podcast at any time by going to prn.fm and clicking on It's Our Money with Ellen Brown. Don't miss Ellen's latest articles at ellenbrown.com. For more information about public banking and a host of resources, from audio and videos to research documents, visit publicbankinginstitute.org. I'm Walt McCree. Thanks for listening, and see you next time on It's Our Money with Ellen Brown. Money.